big day today. I've been kind of touting this for a while on Facebook and sending out tweets all over to anybody interested, gotten a good response. Of course, we all know the Osborne brothers, and we know Sonny Osborne. Sonny's going to call in today sometime, I would say, about 3 o'clock. Hang around for the whole time, though. We've got a lot of good music for you. And I've been taking questions from anyone who wanted to give me one to try to pass on to Sonny. And here's the ground rules. It's kind of like whatever we want to talk about, that's what we're going to talk about. So when he calls in, I will interrupt the music or end it. And we're just going to chat for a while and see what's on Sonny's mind. I know a lot of you are wondering what he's been up to, and he can probably answer all that for you. Of course, the show is going to be peppered a lot with Osborne Brothers music, and because it's got a lot of good Osborne Brothers great classics, some things that are covered by current bands of the old Osborne Brothers tunes, and gosh, their influence was so pervasive. And when you start putting it together and listening to what they did and the influence that they still have, you just think, well, that was one of the all-time bands, and it was. And their influence is going to be around forever and ever and ever. And right here on my phone is none other than Sonny Osborne. Sonny, speak up so they know you're here and alive.
Hello!
Sonny,
I'm doing good, traveling on the highways and byways.
Still on the road. You know, it's funny because of all those... you know, I know you got a little tired of driving that big bus, but every time I talk to you, man, you're driving somewhere. It's like you just can't get off the road.
Well, I enjoy driving, and I really like seeing what I've been to all these places before. Today, I went to Louisville and delivered a banjo to a guy in Louisville. He was from Chicago, and he drove down to Louisville, and I took it there. You know what? Each time I sell one of those cheap banjos, and it's under like 200 miles or something like that, I'll just drive to keep the guy.
Yeah.
And take it to him. And that way, he don't have to pay for delivery, and I don't have to worry about it getting broke.
Yeah. Well, and what you're talking about is a Chief banjo, which, by the way, my number 35 Maple is about a foot away from my left foot, and I'm not going to hit it with that, but I have one of those and know what you're talking about. And you always brag about not advertising those things, and I'm not trying to advertise for you now, but you're out delivering banjos. Man, you're still working the road, just like always.
I'm not getting paid any extra for this, and having all these stupid trucks out here be going on the station. I don't mean that stupid. I'm talking about the machines itself.
You're driving that little electric car, aren't you?
Oh yeah, yeah, that thing's pretty exciting. You know what? It's that I'm getting 239.5 miles a quick gas can, and it's getting 57.3 miles a gallon right now.
Jeez.
How about that?
That's unbelievable. That is unreal. That's unreal. That's what that is. Hey, before I get too far, I had a note here to myself that Ruth McLean Smith of the McLean Family Band sent me a message this morning on Facebook and wanted to make sure that she sends all the love from the McLean Family Band out to you, that they love you, and that they're very happy that you're talking today on the radio, and just, of course, they have good feelings about you. And let me tell you this, too. There's a lot of people that have been waiting to hear from you and what you've been up to, and and the music I played, 90% of what I played so far today is Osborne Brothers music, and people love it still.
You can't go wrong doing that.
No,
well, I tell you what I'm up to, I'm up to about 235, which is about 20 pounds more than I should be, and I'm doing okay. I haven't played since 2003. I think it was in Myrtle Beach. I had a rotator cut my shoulder just from big quit, my left shoulder. And when I had it fixed, it was, I can go up the leg okay, but the muscle that gave me the ability to go back and down the leg was just gone. And so I couldn't play anymore. And I was playing with, the band, no, I don't know, for a year and a half or something like that, and I finally just thought, no, I don't really want to be here right now, so I quit. And you know what? To be honest with you, I don't mean to be putting anything down, but our quality of music has dropped, I thought, probably 40, 50%, and I really couldn't handle that too well. It didn't bother anybody else, you know, but I really couldn't handle it too good, and I thought, you know what, I'm kind of getting near the top of my game right now, and so I'm going to leave it at that. And I said before I heard the whole thing tore down, that we had worked 50 years to build up, I just called in, you know, I'm done. I'm not going to play anymore, and I just went home and, you know, watched grass grow and watched my grandsons play baseball. And,
there you go.
And that's all I've done. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, in the Little League World Series right now, Bobby has a great grandson.
Really?
That's playing these plays for the Goodlettsville, Tennessee team, and they're in the Little League World Series. He played for Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And he's my, I don't know what he is, he's my some nephew.
That's pretty specific.
What do you call that?
I don't know, man. I don't do estate law. You're on your own on this one.
He's my nephew, 80 removed or something like that. I never could understand all that stuff anyway. But, you know, by knowing that it was not going to teach me how to play 40 break down break down 10A flat. So I really wasn't interested in it. And so, but anyway, he's playing in that thing. He's number 28 in Buddy World. And they're on, I think they're on national television today. Yeah, they are. This evening's going to play.
Well.
But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in. I'm enjoying life, though. And sometimes I see some of the people that I really care a lot about, and would like to see more of them. There's a few people out there. To be honest with you, I've never got along really well with people. I don't know whether I'm too much of a big mouth or whatever you call it, I don't really know. But I never did say the things that people wanted me to say. And that's the question that I'd answer it the best I could. But in a lot of times, by the case, that's not really what they want to hear. And so, not too lucky I've got a bad reputation of being mean and all that. But that's okay. They kept the distance. There's a breed of it most of the time. Some of them were, though. And I have a lot of good friends, and I miss seeing them some, but, you know, that's the way it goes.
Well, let me put it this way. It's kind of like what Will Rogers said. It's the opposite of he never met a man he didn't like or never met. I think everybody that's met you probably has a different opinion than what you think the public thinks or what you're talking about this reaction. If they actually meet you and talk to you and know you, then they know you're about as solid as a guy as you're going to find. And let me just say this. If Sonny Osborne's your friend, it's my experience that he's your friend, and that's it. And that don't change.
No, I don't want him as a friend.
Who's that? Well, some of them would say that. Hey, let me ask. Here's a question I have for you.
With a friend like you don't need anything.
I have a question for you. So drive for a minute and think about this, and then I'm going to let you speak. And I know there's people in the chat room that want to hear you through your car phone, but just think about this for a second. We talked about. And this kind of relates right into what you were saying about the sound of the band at the time you retired. I think everybody knows that you have an analytical mind when it comes to music and time and tone, and that you break down everything in your mind to the nth degree, even critical of your own playing and your own music. But I think that's a given. Don't you agree with that? This is the setup, by the way. Oh, you know, I was supposed to do this before we started. I was supposed to say, do you swear to tell the truth and whole truth and nothing but the truth? I forgot that part.
I'm not going to go into that. I'll tell basically the truth, but if you ask me anything too personal, I might
I'm, I'm kidding with you. Here's the personal. Here's the question I had for you, and I'll let you talk so I don't interrupt your response. You do.
Okay.
You have that ear, and you have that ability to break down sound and music and time. Here's my question. It served you well, but do you ever wish you could turn it off?
Say that again.
Do you ever wish you could turn off that hearing that you have, where you hear things and break them down? And do you ever wish you could listen to sound and music without... Because I do think that, and I don't know if you do this in the mirror or not, but if someone's talking to you about music, you get very intense about the professionalism, the time involved. Do you ever wish you could turn that off inside your head?
No, I really don't. I have things that I like to hear that I really like, and I analyze. I guess that's the right word. I analyze every piece of music that I hear. And I just take it apart and think, you know what? I don't think they went to that. Or I really like the way they did this or this, this, and this. But I really take music apart like that. But there's some things I really love just to do. Ray Price from 1959 or 60 all the way to now. I really love to hear Ray Price sing because he has followed his voice and not tried to make it do things that it wouldn't do. And I really appreciate that. His music, the arrangement of the music that he played, Tommy Jackson played fiddle, and it was close to the time. And I really, really enjoy listening to Ray Price. There's other people, though, that they had it for a while, and then they tried to do things that they couldn't do because that's what they like. Once we worked with Merle Haggard from 1971 to 74, I think it was, 75, and during that time, and to me, Merle Haggard is not.
I think I lost you. Hold on, we're going to try to reconnect. I think he maybe drove into a tunnel. You still there, Sonny? There, that beat means he's gone. All right, I'm going to catch him again. He's driving in, delivering a banjo, which is what he loves to do, as you said. And I'm going to call him back in. Let's go back to some music, and we'll catch him again. Maybe we'll get a better connection. I'll bet you that he's driving with his windows down. But we'll get him back on here. Let's go back and listen to some Osborne Brothers. By the way, I know for sure the answer to who's playing that second banjo, but I'm going to ask him when we get him back on. All right, that was Ruby. And I found Sonny again. We lost him somewhere down there in Louisville. And you're back, right?
Yeah, they hung up on me.
I hung up on you. Yeah.
I got too close to the truth, and you did the thing.
That's what it was. That's what it was. I hung up on you. That's correct.
That's it. I got way too close to the truth in there, and you just think, whoa, I can't take this.
Now what I would have done is just objected. I just would have objected, and the judge would have instructed everybody out there on Worldwide Bluegrass to ignore that last answer. Don't forget you're dealing with a 30-year experienced trial attorney. So words get critical to me. And if I ever feel like you're causing me trouble, I'll just object.
Well, your lesson over the
55-year
tradition.
Well, I know. So
and
I'm
you know what? You can't trust me anymore.
Well, to which I object. Objection overruled. I got you. Hey, before we went back on after Ruby, I was telling you, there are people, the thing about this Worldwide Bluegrass, it's all on the internet. There are people right now in this little chat room from Scotland, and there's people from all over the world listening, and they're all here to hear what you have to talk about. They're not here to talk about, they aren't here to listen to me because, you know, what I have to say is not that relevant, so... So they all tuned in today to hear what Sonny Osborne's going to talk about. Oh, you know something I wanted to tell you, ask you again online. I know the answer, but it keeps coming up. Who's playing the second banjo and Della May and Ho Honey and those things?
Well, it started with Ruby, Della May, Ho Honey Ho, Andrew Rothbard. There was five, but Bobby played the other banjo on, my brother. And everybody thinks, well, did you show him how to do that? No. I'll tell you what, when I was a kid, Bobby had played around where Lester and Earl were, and he had seen the Earl, some things that Earl did. I was like 11 years old, and he showed me a couple of things that Earl had done, and it helped me out a great deal. So Bobby could have been a good banjo player if he had really sat down and worked at it. Bobby's main thing that he wanted to do more than anything else, though, to play the fiddle.
Really?
Yeah, I think he would have traded every part of music. I mean, vocal, everything, paddling, everything, if he could have been a really good fiddle player, a great fiddle player. I think he would have done that.
I've never heard that.
And I would have known how to play the piano.
Well, you wanted to play the piano and he wanted to play the fiddle. That would have been interesting.
I'll tell you what, if I could have been a really, really accomplished piano player, I would have given up everything. I love the piano. Yeah, how about that?
Well, that would have made an interesting bluegrass band. Of course, you had a piano in there sometimes.
Well, I doubt it's a good way to play bluegrass. Can you imagine a fiddle?
No. Well, let me ask you this now that you brought that up and you've opened that topic for the whole world to hear about. What kind of music would you hear in your mind to play on a piano?
I don't know. That's the good thing about a piano, you see. There's no limit. There's absolutely no limit.
It's all right
in
front
of you. To do with the piano.
Yeah,
you can play anything on a piano.
Well, but you
can play honky tonk, bluegrass, blues, anything you want to play, you can play on a piano.
Well, but you had to hear a piano that make you want to play the piano. So what was it that where you heard one? What kind of music was it that made you think that's what I want to play?
On our own records, the one that really, really sold me was this. The guy that played the piano on our record, his name was Dick Robinson.
Say the name again. Say his name again.
Yeah, Dick Robinson.
Okay.
His name was Marcus. But, you know, I'm going to call over because I think we're going to die again.
Don't die. Don't die in any sense of the word. Not on the phone or get off the road if the trucks are catching you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, man, that's great.
Okay. I'm just going to sit here for until a cop's come anyway. And then I'll lie out of it.
No. I told you about that before. You got to be careful with those boys. Well, all right. What piano player was it again that you mentioned?
Marcus Robbins. Pete Robbins.
Okay.
He's a blind guy from Nashville. He played on every band. You name it, and he's played on the record. He was the best I've ever seen. And we did a song called, I think it was in East Stillwaters. And the background that he played on that, just absolutely, oh man, I thought, you know what, if I could do that right there, I would get everything if I could do that.
Well,
and get the stuff. But Pete could play anything. He could play anything he wanted to play. He could play it on the piano.
Well,
and he was fine.
Why didn't you do it?
Me?
Yeah.
Nah, you know what? When I quit, we had a guy playing the fiddle with us named Derek Deakins, and he was very accomplished. He could play. He was a good musician and could read really well. And so I told Derek, I said, "Hey, why don't I just pay you to come to my house and teach me piano?" I've got a piano and an electric one too for Yamaha things. And so he did. He came to the house and had two lessons. I thought, I can't do this. I can't. I'm used to looking at music from the top down. I can't lay it flat out in front of me and understand it. So I gave it up to that job.
Hey, you mentioned Pig Robbins, and is that the guy you told the story about? Oh, golly, what was it? I've heard you tell this a couple times about a blind man behind the wheel of a car.
Oh, my gosh.
is that the guy?
Yeah, that's him. I don't know if it was on one of our sessions or not. I can't remember. It's been so long ago. That's 35 years ago. Brady Martin and Pig were really good friends. And the story goes that Brady told Brady, I always wanted to drive a car. And so Brady had this yellow Cadillac. And Printer's Alley in Nashville is where all these really, really high-class clubs are, and all anybody that knows anybody hangs out in Printer's Alley. They used to at that time. I don't even know now. But Brady said, I'll tell you what, Pig, he said, we're going to go down to Printer's Alley, and he said, we'll stop out when we first go in, and you come to the driver's seat, and I'll sit over here, and I'll guide the car with my left hand so nobody can see it, and you go down through there, and I'll tell you who's standing out there, and you roll the window down and say, hey, buddy, how you doing? And just keep going. So, they went down there, and when they ran and were standing there talking in this alley, and then comes by this yellow Cadillac, and Grady's over driving, you know, he said, okay, now. And he rolled the window down, and he said, hey, Ray, buddy, how you doing? He just kept on going. And Ray told me later, he said, I got lost. He said, you know, we'd had a few, and he said, I'm just out there looking, and that's a big guy. Oh, my gosh. There was another time in the studio that a kid missed. There was something we did. They've been an up this hill and down or something like that, where it had some different breaks in it, and Pig missed it. And the third time he missed it, he said, I won't use the profanity that they used.
Well, good, because I don't have a delete button.
No, I'm not going to do that anyway. I don't know. Anyway, Brady said, hey, what's wrong with you?
Every once in a while, how these arguments or discussions start up about what's bluegrass and what isn't, and what kind of a band is a bluegrass band. You guys had drums, steel guitars, pianos.
Yep, we did. And the thing that I always thought, what difference it make? If it's good music and people listen to it, I mean, what makes bluegrass one color and other kind of music, another color, another kind of music, another color. As long as it's good, as long as you enjoy listening to it, what difference does it make? That's what I always thought. Mm-hmm. And we also realized in the early 60s that we couldn't make it just as a bluegrass band, unquote. Like Lester Earl or Bill Monroe or the Stanley Brothers, we didn't want to do that, and we had the advantage because we had Bobby's voice. And nobody could duplicate that. Nobody. And so we used that to full advantage. And it worked for us. And so we got to thinking. I'll tell you, one time we played a place in Minneapolis called the Flame Club. And we were up there a week. And we started out with this bluegrass stuff. And they had a good Western band up there, swing band. Man, they were good, too. And so when we went on, people just were talking, and you couldn't even hear us for people out there talking to each other. And I had a GoPro, but I had a Banjo neck in it, and it was electric that I had bought. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to plug that thing in and play it. And so I asked the guitar player, I said, could I borrow your amp and play through it? He said, yeah, man, go ahead. And so I played that thing, and it got their attention because it was loud. And so the next day, this was our third day up there, I told Bobby, I said, man, you guys need to go to a music store and get pickups and put on those instruments. And if they don't like us, that's one thing, but we will peel the paint off the wall back there and we'll get them out and they can't talk. And that was really bothering me that they did that. So the next day, Dale Sled and Bobby, and I think Bonnie Reno was with us, and Bonnie was playing electric bass already. And then I played that electric, whatever you call that thing. And you know, from that point on, people listened. They just stopped listening. And so we got to thinking, why not just use this all the time? And this was about 1967 maybe, I guess it was. And so we did. We started, we played festivals and everything, and we plugged those instruments in, and it really got attention. And there's something to be said about, it really doesn't matter what people say about you as long as they're talking about you. I believe a part of that, but then another part of it, I don't believe. So anyway, people were really talking, and we played, Berryville, Virginia, that Watermelon Park in Berryville. And, man, there must have been 5,000 people sitting out there. And we were kind of the featured artists. Well, when we started to play, we'd already set our amps and everything up. And when we started to play, my banjo was dead. It's just absolutely dead. I looked over and somebody had cut the cord with a pair of wire cutter.
Really?
Yeah, Joe Green, the fiddle player, was with us on that trip, and Ariana and Joe were standing over the side of the stage and said, Joe, go out there, and in a cabinet over the sink in the bus out there, I said, there's four or five new cords out there, go get me one. And he went up there and got me a cord. I just plugged it in, and we kept on playing, and man, we got a standing ovation when we were done. We go, you know, well, we've hit on something here, I believe. And it really worked for us. And we added Bobby's son played the drums with us, and that really helped us a great deal. But I tell you, there's a downside to having drums in a bluegrass band because it keeps you from playing rhythm on your instrument, like Bobby's mandolin.
Yeah.
And rhythm you play on the banjo, you just kind of, you don't have to do that anymore because that rhythm is right there and it keeps on going. You don't have to do that anymore. And it hurts you in that sense. But other than that, we had a good thing going for a while there.
Well,
it was a good ride. It really was.
Well, I'd say so. Hey, is that around the time when you were electric that you had that little box of lights on your banjo?
Oh.
I love that.
Yeah, it was nothing. It was nothing. I told Robbie, I said, I want you to make me a box about 8 or 9 inches long and just make a little rectangular black box out of metal and put a light on one end, a red light, and a green light on the other end. I want you to have where I can plug in on one end and plug in on the other end and just have a straight wire running on the inside from plug to plug. And it did nothing. It did nothing. And there's little lights. And we go back every night and turn the red light off and leave the green light on. And then we go back and turn them both on. We played with it. And it did nothing. And we had people saying, man, that thing really has to yourself. What is that thing? And we think, oh, that's a big thing that we keep doing. It did nothing. It was just a box that you plug in on one side and plug out on the other side.
Well, let me ask you this. Why did you think to bedevil people with a little electric box on your banjo?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Why did you put it on there if it didn't do anything? Just to make people ask?
Yeah, just for attention. Just, you know, just for attention. It's just like, why do you have your hair long, or why do you have it real short, or why do you shave your head? For attention, just like everything else, just for attention, and people talked about it. I tell you another thing we had, too. In this one machine that we traveled in, the bass amp, which was huge, could be exposed in the back. And so, I don't know if you know what a flanger is or not.
Yes, sir.
A flanger.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Bobby had a flanger, Bobby's son. And Bobby's son, Robbie, was an electronics genius. He really was. He was smart. And so, he hooked his flanger up to that amp. And when he would turn it on, it would sound just like a wildcat. We started to they asked, what is that? What makes that noise? What is that? Well, that's a new engine. The GM is trying to perfect. It's supposed to give us about 60 or 70 miles a gallon. We pulled that around, and people started believing it. Mm-hmm. But it was just fun. That's all it was. And Robbie would turn that thing on in a service station, and people would gather around and look, and they couldn't see the amp out there on the back. They could just hear it. We just had fun with it.
Well, it sounds like you had a lot of fun, although I know it's difficult traveling on the road all the time like that, too, in a regular working band. And you guys had high standards. You had absolutely high standards.
Yeah, we did, but we also had fun with what we did. And we played, I don't want to sound big-headed, but we played good music. And just like I told you before, we had Bobby, and he couldn't be duplicated. Nobody could duplicate what he did. And it was guys that tried it. But nobody could duplicate what he did. But then we also had fun with it. We had fun on stage. We played and had fun. We were having a good time. We were making money. And everything was really good. And, well, in 71, we won the CMA Vocal Group of the Year. And from 70 to 80... we were the number one bluegrass band, I guess, forever in Tennessee or the world or whatever. But we really had a good thing going there. We had hit records, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun. But then, you know what? It got to be a job. It got to be to where it was work all of a sudden, not as much fun anymore. But it was more, and that's when I started thinking, I need to get out of this. Mm-hmm. I really need to get out of it. And I wanted to quit a good 10 years before I did, though. Probably should have.
Hey, do me a favor and say hi to Dana Cupp. He's listening.
Hey, Dana. What you doing, boy? Dana's in Detroit. You notice how I said that? I said Detroit.
Detroit, yeah.
That's
where he is.
And Dan worked with us for, six or seven, 8 years, something like that. And he also played banjo for Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys. He worked for Jimmy Martin there, too. Whoa. And Dan's a good guy, good friend, and good player.
Good player. Good player.
He's a legend in his own mind.
He's typing. He's in this chat room and he's typing LOL. What you mean? You know, laugh out loud. He's hearing what you're saying.
Oh really? And you know, you mentioned McLean there a while ago.
Yeah.
One of the most underrated manager players, I think, in the whole business is Raymond McLean. Raymond McLean is a good banjo player and a smart guy, too.
Yeah.
And one of my good friends, I really like Raymond a lot. He's a good guy.
You know, that band, talking about the McLean family band, they were, you know, looking back on what they accomplished, and they went to Africa, they went everywhere.
They played in something like 162 different countries.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, I didn't even know there were that many countries.
You know, just Nancy Ann, one of the sisters, lives not too far from me, and one Christmas she brought to me a whole stack of their albums. I have the whole stack of the whole McLean family albums here.
Okay.
I thought that was awesome.
I'm going to change my spot now. I'm going to grow a little way.
All right.
And then pull off again. I'm afraid somebody will say, "Hey, there's a cord on our phone now." And they'll send another stop to.
Well, listen, maybe you ought to focus on driving, and then we can consider this volume one if you want. We can do this again if you agree to do it.
I'll do it tomorrow if you want to. Well, I'll do it tomorrow anyway.
Well, and then I'll just have to repeat it. I try to remember everything and repeat it back on the following Saturday. But why don't we figure on doing this once a month or so just for fun?
Okay, yeah, that'd be good.
We can talk to you.
How long have we been on?
A couple days.
How long have we been on? How long does people used to stay on with you? Can they get tired of you?
Well, they stay on until we're done, and there's no time limit. It's just whenever we're done, we feel like it's a good time, then we're done. So, I mean, if you got to move on for traffic, and I don't want you to get arrested down there because Louisville's an hour and a half away from me.
If you want to hang up, that's okay, but I'm in no hurry.
It's not that I want to hang up. I just don't want to keep you from driving and being careful, that's all.
What was that
rain maker
that movie that got some
close
on the country? Oh, Rain Man? Yeah. Okay. He ran that beer run off in the pool of some kind.
Yeah.
All the time saying, I'm a good guy.
Well, listen, why don't I let you get back to work, and let's do this again. Anytime you want to do it, and we'll talk, and I had a good time. I know there's a lot of people out there listening that haven't heard a lot of things. Well, I haven't heard a lot of things you're talking about. So, and you know what? They all want to know what you're doing, and they want to hear you talk about what you've been up to.
Well, I don't do much of anything, and everybody expects me to. But I don't really go where music is. I went a couple times with the Grass and where. I went once with Larry Stevenson, and, I said, I'm there, then, you there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, as soon as they find out I'm there, they come up and ask the same questions they wanted to ask a long time ago, that I've probably answered already for them. But, anyway, you mentioned that you had something from Dana Cutler on a chat room?
Yeah.
Well, I always set it up to four people and ask questions if they want to.
Well, we do, and right now they're just listening. I've had some questions. I can't connect them to voice talk to you. They just have to type them to me as they come up.
Well, thanks to you, the question you asked.
Somebody wanted to know about Siempre, the tune you wrote, Siempre. Why did you write it, and how long did it take you to write it?
15 minutes. I think that's the one written in the studio between songs, I think it was, anyway. I don't know. I like the idea. Siempre is Spanish, means forever or always. And I wanted to call it, let me see. Oh, El Cuello Rojo Blues. That's what I was going to originally name it. And I had it named that. And Hal Love played on the record, and he said, "What are you calling this?" And I said, "El Cuello Rojo Blues." He said, "You can't title this a redneck blues." And Owen Bradley first said, he said, "What was that I just heard?" And Hal Love knew Spanish.
Well, Semper is much easier to remember.
The redneck blues, and he said, "No, you can't do that." So
Hey, Dana Cup wants to know about Carl Farmer. He said, "Ask him about Carl Farmer."
Oh my goodness! do you want me to tell you the real story?
Whatever story you want to tell.
There's no profanity. That's not good. He gets to Buck Owens, hired a banjo player one time, and I don't even know the. I tell you, I do know the old boy's name, but I'm not going to say it. But anyway, he was, and I hate to say it like this, but he was. He's just a bad banjo player. That's all it was to it. He just had a. His old boy just couldn't play very well. And so, I nicknamed him Carl Farmer. And he had a certain lick that he did that I heard Dana Cook do, and I told Dana, I said, "You know what? That's a Carl Farmer lick you did right there." And we talked about that for years. Well, we played, I think it was Clay City, Kentucky, at that little building over there, and had people just hanging off the rafters. Well, on the third row was Carl Farmer. Of course, and you got to get this picture. He didn't know that we had nicknamed him Carl Farmer. And the only people that knew it was me and Dana Cup, and maybe David Crow, I'm not sure about that, but me and Dana. And so, I said, we're going to do a song of special for Carl Farmer. Sadly, both I lost it. And that old boy just sitting there, he didn't know what's going on. I didn't point him out or anything. I said, "He's here tonight, Carl Farmer." And I said, "He's a beginning banjo player." Oh, my gosh. We had a good time,
Well, yeah, it brings up something. I don't want to point any fingers, and I won't do it, about any modern bands playing today, but you guys did have fun on stage.
Wait, what?
You had fun on stage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
I mean, a lot of bands, not a lot of bands, but you see some bluegrass bands that today don't seem to... you guys were so comfortable. Maybe it's because you knew you could deliver when you needed to, but you seemed to have fun and joke around and still deliver the goods. And a lot of bands get up there and they're just like, man, they're deadpan, or they got a set thing that they do. And the Osborne Brothers were there live, and you did it. You had a good time.
I really feel sorry for some of the people. No, I don't mean that bad anyway, but when we really set our hands there, we could play. I mean, we really could play. We messed around a lot and had a lot of fun, but we really could play when we set our heads to it and really could do the job. And to me, if you brag or show off or do anything, if you can back it up, that's all well and good as far as I'm concerned. But and when we see people that were just struggling so hard to play it as good as they could, and this was not coming off good at all. And we didn't make fun of them as such, but we were just, I don't know what you call it. It was just a thing.
You were enjoying it.
We enjoyed our position. We did that for sure. And we took advantage of it.
Well, that's what I got to say. Let's go off the record on that one. We'll keep that for another day. Hey, I have a question.
Right.
I have a question for you. Pete Warnick sent me an email. Pete Warnick sent me an email of some questions. And he sent me four or five questions. I do want to ask you one, though, that today. And I'll save the rest of these for later.
Pete, you said Pete Warnick?
Yeah, man. Dr. Banjo, you know.
Yeah.
He sent me five questions in email the other day because he knew you were coming on the show. So I'm going to ask you the last... Yeah, listen, man, everybody's been waiting to hear from you. I know that's hard for you to recognize, but...
It really is. You know what? Well, I've heard all the accolades and all the stuff, you know, but I put that in file 13. It means absolutely nothing. We won every award there was to win in our time, and I never went to pick up the first one. I mean, that notoriety stuff is just something that, you know, I know it goes along with this, but I never did fall into that. I never did want it, didn't need it, don't need it right now either. It's just what I do. It's like a guy that can really carpenter, a guy that can really build houses and work on cars and things like that. You don't see people gather around for me. I mean, their wives and children want to go to work with them. They sit around the garage and watch them work on a car all day or build a house. You don't see that. I mean, I took this as just as what God gave me to make a living, and that's what I did with it. And the notoriety that goes along with it, I never did care for that. It just didn't make any difference to me at all. But I know it's there, and you can't get away from it, but I never did enjoy that part of it.
Well, let me ask you a question from Pete, and this is a pretty direct one. What are your biggest satisfactions? And maybe you just answered that, but Pete Warnick asked me to ask you, what are your biggest satisfactions from your career?
My biggest satisfaction?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Probably, I'll tell you one thing, and nobody, I don't even know if I've ever told anybody this. We went to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania after we had electrified our instruments. And we had a set of drums, full set of drums, and Robbie was playing them. And to be honest, I mean, we were really hot at that time. We really were. And so we go into this park in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, Bluegrass Festival, and we just barely could get on the stage for amps and drums. And I looked at Robbie, and I said, "We won, didn't we?" And he said, "I think we did." Another time was we were voted as the number one country vocal group, CMA Vocal Group of the Year, and we just kind of we looked at each other and said, and in our minds, we beat them at their own game. That's what we did. And we were put down so much for doing what we did and doing country stuff and all that, but we actually beat them at their own game. And that was a really satisfying thing.
That was in what, early 70s, was that, Sonny?
I'm sorry?
Was that early 70s?
71.
71, that's what I thought.
Yeah, the CMA thing was 1971. And, there's no secret. I get into every kind of advice known to man. I really have alcohol and speed stuff and all that stuff, you know. And to get freedom on that, on 1978, I guess it was, to be free of that and cigarettes. And do you know, when I stopped smoking, I was smoking 5 packs of cigarettes a day.
Jeez.
And to be free of all that, that's satisfying to me. To be free, completely free of that.
Yeah.
And I have been for 30 years now. So
going through it all, coming back on the other end, and you're free of those vices that you describe. And so that's a good satisfaction.
Well, it is, yeah. But it's probably two acts of God before I realized that one was the shoulder. Completely, everything in the shoulder just let loose at once, and my arms dropped. And the other, in 07, I had a stroke, and that really was a light stroke. I mean, just a brush. But it could have been 100 times worse. And that really woke me up to a lot of things about living and life and what's real and what isn't real. A lot of our music and the industry itself is not real. And a lot of things you see, when you see certain people, I won't mention any names, but just certain people, what you see is not really what they are.
Hmm.
What they are comes out when they're alone, you know, and I just always didn't like that very much. I met a lot of people that I was really disappointed after I met them. And Merle Haggard, I really thought so much of his voice and the way he sang and everything. I didn't really want to meet him because I was afraid he would be that way too.
Really?
And consequently, he was not. But I had met so many people that would be one thing on stage, and then off the stage, it'd be a completely different thing. And I just met a lot of people like that. And I never did like that. I tried hard not to be that way and be honest, you know, about everything.
Well, you're still standing, man. You're still driving, delivering banjos, and doing what you want to do.
You know what? The good thing about that is the look on people's stuff. That look that a boy opened, that case back here a while ago, and he opened the case and looked at it, he said, "Oh my gosh, that is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen." And that in itself is payment for the whole thing. That's the joy of all of it right there. Is that satisfaction that he got. And he said, "I've never had a gold badge before." And I said, "Well, look at it this way. You'll never be able to say that again."
Maple, walnut, or mahogany?
This one was maple.
Yeah.
And I've got another guy. I've sold a lot of badges in the last 3 or 4 weeks, a lot of them. I don't know what it is, but I have. That's good, though. And I'm not trying to make a living selling banjos, making banjos. If a guy just relied on that, he'd be in a bad shape, for sure.
Well,
I just enjoy doing it. I give a really good instrument, a really good professional instrument that a pro can play with and be happy with it for a reasonable price. And that's, you know, one of them.
That's why you don't sell them through dealers.
No, I wouldn't. I don't sell them through dealers. I've never spent 1 cent advertising. And I've got probably over 300 badges out there now.
Hmm.
So, it's good.
They're good ones. I enjoy mine a lot. It's my favorite one, I have to tell you. But and I wouldn't say that if it weren't true, you know.
They don't cut something, I think. I think he still got it unless he sold it.
Well, he just now said they are the best. he's still typing away. They are the best, he says. So Dana heard you.
Well, I appreciate it. Dana's a good friend, and I've sure known him a long time. We've been through a lot of things together, Dana and I. I'm glad to hear Pete Warren persisted.
Oh, yeah. Listen, everybody's listening. Everybody wants to know what you're doing. I got more questions than I could, you know, they give me 3 hours on this show, and I'm happy to give it all to you, but we can't fit it all in anyway. So this is great. Everybody's considering this volume one. Say again.
Just let me know when you're going to another opening, and I'll call in.
Anytime, buddy. Anytime at all. We'll do it. I appreciate it. It's nice talking to you again, as always. And we'll make it a regular thing. We can talk about basketball or baseball if you want to sometime. I don't care.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, just let me know when, and I'll be glad to.
Hello,
Damon. Hello, Ruth. I love you all. All that.
Hey, man. It's right. Peace. People love you. People love you, Sonny. That's just all there is to it.
Gosh, I don't see how they can help it.
Listen, be careful. So you're driving back home today then, right?
No, I'm going to over to Frank's and pick up a new banjo. I'm out. I'm so well.
Oh.
I'm going to pick up a new banjo over there, and then I'll go home probably tomorrow.
Right.
I'll be calling the time I get over there to this place.
Right. Hey, listen, we'll talk about getting another date, and I'll let everybody know, and they can write more questions for you.
Okay, yeah. I'll be glad. I'll answer anything we want to talk about.
You be careful driving,
I'm
friend.
I'm smart like that.
You be careful driving, friend. All right?
I'm going to. All
right,
see
you.
Take care of yourself.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
See you later. All right. That was fun. It's a difficult connection sometimes, and I wish I could find a way. I'm looking for a way to get a more direct feed in, and Sonny was delivering a banjo, which is what he likes to do. He likes to make and have made banjos, and I see the question here, and Dana, you already answered it, that, you know, he goes to the best. He goes to Frank Neat to build those banjos, and, man, they're nice. I got one. I love it. It's maple. It's just like built like a Sonny's Granada is what he's trying to recreate. So I enjoyed it. We're going to do that some more. You all heard him say that he'd do this again, and we'll get it going again. Next time maybe we'll get him in one spot with a better location. What happened, I think, is, you know, he was going to make this call, but he has such a good time. He really does enjoy, you know, he enjoys delivering banjos. He likes, and what he said, that comment, I think is pretty accurate. Of course, he doesn't do anything but tell the truth, that the look on that guy's face when he opened that case up, he loves doing that stuff. So what a good time that was. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Sonny Osborne. I did. And thanks so much for participating in the chat room and feeding me questions. And Dana Cup out there, I appreciate you, man, pitching in and helping me throw some nice ones up to Sonny, who says he'll come back and do it some more. And we'll hold him to that. We'll get him back in here again, and maybe he won't be out doing what he loves to do, which is delivering banjos. And now we know, I didn't know this, maybe somebody else knew this, he wanted to play the piano and Bobby wanted to be a fiddle player. Maybe they could have been a classical music duet somewhere in another lifetime. But I always enjoy talking to Sonny. We'll get him back in here, and I can't think of a better way to go off on a Sonny Osborne Saturday afternoon than to go out with one of his tunes. Bugle on the Banjo, thanks so much for listening to Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass on Worldwide Bluegrass. See you next week, folks.